Coming up on Path to Zero.
I think there is an enormous opportunity for growth in the electrification side, growth in the biofuel side. Both of them are lower carbon options, better options than fossil fuels.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, engineer, entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, and clean energy industry veteran, who now serves as president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Hello, and happy Earth Day 2024. We're really happy to have you join us. Not only am I speaking with a fantastic guest today, I'm excited to share an important announcement at the end of our discussion. It's hard to imagine a more appropriate guest for this special Earth Day episode of Path to Zero. We're pleased to welcome back a true innovator in fleet decarbonization. Keith Kerman oversees New York City's more than 28,000 vehicles, which is the nation's largest fleet. He's responsible for creating what is widely regarded as the nation's greenest fleet. Keith joined us for our Climate Week panel in New York last year, and we had so many comments and questions from our listeners. Then we invited him back to get an update on New York's ambitious goals to decarbonize its fleet with electrification and renewable fuels. Keith, it's great to talk to you again. Welcome to Path to Zero.
Thank you, Tucker. I'm glad to be with you again.
You know, I've enjoyed following you since we met a year ago, but let's talk a little bit about you. You have a great role overseeing more than 28,000 vehicles in New York City. Talk about that fleet and maybe your role in serving that fleet.
Sure. New York City has the largest municipal fleet in the United States. It's about 28,500. It was a little bigger. We did some fleet reduction and efficiency under Mayor Adams to begin the administration. We also support the New York City public schools. So about 10,000 school buses. We support the New York Housing Authority, about 1,000 vehicles. So there are other fleets that we support, probably 40,000 total assets that we're supporting every day. So I'm the first chief fleet officer for the city of New York. I was appointed by Mayor Bloomberg and worked under Mayor de Blasio and now Mayor Adams, also in this role. And so my job is really to manage the fleet in total, to make sure that all 50 of our agencies are working together, pursuing the same types of initiatives and approaches. Of course, our biggest agencies and well-known throughout the world, the New York City Police Department, the New York City Fire Department, the New York City Department of Sanitation, but also Transportation, Environmental Protection, Parks, the Office of Medical Examiner, the Office of Emergency Management, the Sheriff. We have a lot of agencies that, use this equipment. There are about 1,800 full-time staff who work in fleet, another 200 or so who work in transportation positions, 80,000 authorized drivers, with over 30,000 of those being in the uniform services. So it's a big fleet that is really out there helping New York every single day in, every type of way, cleaning, repairing, securing, responding to emergencies, transporting people in need. And so it's been a great honor to do this job since 2011.
It's great. Yeah, nobody understands, I think, better a true 24/7 operation than you. You know, interesting to me, you're really not a fleet guy, right? If I remember, you have a social studies degree from Harvard. I know you started in New York City with the Parks Department. How did you transition from parks to fleet? And then talk to us about your passion for sustainability as we celebrate Earth Day today.
Sure. So I guess I am definitely a fleet guy now. It'd be hard to say. The fleet industry recently gave me kind of a fleet professional career award. So I'm a fleet person now, but I didn't start that way. I actually used to help manage a gym and work at a gym in my college, which you mentioned, and I wrote my academic thesis in school about authority relations within sporting. And it was really the recreational and athletic side of the Parks Department that had originally interested me. But when I came to New York City Parks, I almost immediately got engaged in management and operations. I ran a competitive government initiative for a couple of years. I became the chief of operations and then the assistant commissioner for citywide operations. For most of my career at Parks, I ran citywide operations. And still, I wasn't a fleet guy per se. I used to ride to work in a bicycle. I tried not to even drive a car that often. So how did I get into fleet? Well, operations and parks, all roads led to fleet. You want to clean the parks? Well, you need the small garbage trucks we use called the mini packers. You need the crew pickup trucks that can bring out the graffiti crews and the cleanup crews. You want to get the parks fixed, the Dr. Playground van. Forestry, they call them climbers and pruners, but of course they use the bucket trucks and the log loaders. New York City cleans its beaches overnight in an beach cleaning equipment operation, very fascinating operation that, I wish I could show to your viewers. It's really interesting. So all roads to cleaning and improving the parks ended up leading to fleet. And so I did a lot of work in improving fleet maintenance, improving fleet acquisitions, and some of that work got some attention in improving fleet sustainability, and led to a process by which Mayor Bloomberg asked me if I could do this and do it, what I had done for parks, and do it citywide. On the sustainability side, I have always cared about these issues. When I was in middle school, I was winning awards for writing about solar energy. I have these two plaques they gave me when I was a kid. I always cared about sustainability. And of course, I came to Parks. Parks is the green agency of New York City. We led on so many of the issues that I manage today. We were the first agency to do biofuels. We were the first agency or among the first to do electrification, to do the hybrid vehicles. We were the first to do natural gas fueling. We don't focus on natural gas any longer, but we were the first to have our own natural gas compressors in both Central Park and Flushing Meadow Corona Park. So Parks is the green agency. All tried to always work to lead on sustainability. I did that when I was there managing park operations and brought that to citywide.
Fascinating career. You know, speaking of all those fuels, I think New York City leads the conversation around carbon neutrality, and you not only lead the conversation in goal setting, my instinct is that you probably are further along than most. In fact, your goal was to be all electric by 2038. Talk to us about not only the goal, but the progress you're making towards it.
Sure. So on the electrification side, Mayor Adams signed a local law in October of 2023, local law 140. Which calls for the city fleet to go all electric. And this was an extension of what we were already working towards in a mayoral executive order. So for light and medium duty by 2035 to go electric, including on the emergency services side. For heavy, emergency, and specialized by 2038, if available in the marketplace. So our ambition is zero emissions. Let's get out of fossil fuels. Let's get out of liquid fuels. We do have to be realistic. The law also includes exemptions for when these vehicles or these operations are simply not ready to implement. The biggest single example being, we still do not know of any unit, pretty much at any level, but certainly not for trucks, that can plow as an electric. So New York City has 3,000 plow trucks that are our garbage trucks, our salt spreaders, our large dump trucks that are used to plow the city of New York. So right now there isn't an electric model. So the law does include exemptions. We are hopeful that that will change as we move through the years, but the law has some flexibility if it does not. Right now we have broken the 5,000 mark. In fact, we'll do a little bit more to announce that later this Earth Week. But we're operating over 5,000 electric vehicles now, about half all electric and half plug-in electric. So we've made enormous progress. At the New York Auto Show, we displayed our first all-electric correction bus, maybe the first in the world, I don't know. But if somebody else knows of a correction bus that's all electric, let me know. Our first canine emergency response unit. that's all electric. And so the canine units are extraordinarily important in rescue response and emergency response. And now they'll operate in trucks that are all electric, cleaner for the dogs, cleaner for the drivers. As well as our first taxi enforcement. Our Taxi and Limousine Commission has a law enforcement division. So they're going all electric. So we've made a real lot of progress with lots more to go.
When you think about alternatives to electric, really, I'm assuming maybe only two kind of pop up. One would be hydrogen, and the other maybe some biofuels. But talk about how you assess alternatives to electric and how you've kind of ranked them.
Sure. Well, I mean, let me first say we have what we call the NYC Clean Fleet Plan. And that is our published document. It was first published in 2015, updated in 2021. We will be releasing and announcing a further update in May of this year at our fleet show. And I'll give my first plug to we have a fleet show on May 16th at the Flushing Meadow Corona Park. A lot of fun, over 200 vendors, usually over 1,000 participants, free to the public, free to everyone. So anyone who's listening, come join us in the park on May 16th. But the NYC Clean Fleet Plan has a three-part strategy. Electrify everything you can as soon as you can. And we talked a little bit about what we're doing there. Still implement hybrids and efficiencies. And so, you know, we are piloting the Mach-E and other units for electric policing, we're still implementing hybrid police cars as opposed to straight gas. Every ambulance in New York City is actually a version of a hybrid plug-in with an alternative power unit. Under Mayor Adams, I already mentioned, we have reduced the fleet. So the cleanest vehicle is one you don't operate. And we've reduced 4% of the city fleet. So the second strategy is hybrids and efficiencies. And then the third one that you mentioned is biofuels. So Mayor Adams announced in October that we had begun the transition to the entire diesel on and off-road fleet of the city of New York to renewable diesel. Actually, RD, renewable diesel, 95% with 5% biodiesel, 100% non-fossil fuel. And that is going in tremendously well. We're pretty close to the rollout. Every agency, the Department of Sanitation, Environmental Protection, Transportation, Parks, Correction, all exclusively use renewable diesel today in everything, on and off-road. Police is pretty far down the line, and the fire department is about 50% down, with the goal for police and fire to be completely done by June 30th, probably a little earlier. So we've brought the whole fleet into renewable diesel and biofuel. We are the first major user of renewable diesel anywhere in the East Coast of the United States, probably anywhere east of the Rocky Mountains. If you know renewable diesel, it's a full switch out fuel for regular diesel. It's the same ASTM 975, operates just like regular diesel, but it's a waste and farm product used incredibly in California. Half the fuel in California, public and private, is renewable diesel. So we've already been a big adopter of biofuels. And until we can get to zero emission, that biofuels is a big piece of what we're doing. The hydrogen, very interested in hydrogen. You know, and we know that hydrogen has a lot of implementation and buzz in the West Coast, that the federal government is investing. For a fleet manager, hydrogen's great, right? Zero emission, water vapor emission. It's scalable, right? So you can use any type, class one to class eight, off-road, low maintenance. However, the infrastructure for hydrogen is a big issue. You know, we would need all new vehicles. Those don't exist today. All new fuel dispensers, those don't exist today. We would need to deal with the fire code issues for transporting hydrogen around the city, for upgrading our garages. We have over 90 garage buildings, or pretty old buildings, for fire code for the maintenance side. And of course, you need a sustainable source for the hydrogen, a green renewable source for the hydrogen. You know, fracking is not a popular concept in our state. And so you would really need a safe and clean source for the hydrogen. So those are a lot of really big issues that are kind of would have to be addressed before we could go too far into hydrogen.
Yeah, really the fascinating answer. You know, if I do my math right, I think New York land mass is about 305 square miles, give or take, a little bit more if you include the water. So to me, it's one that makes sense for using battery electric, maybe. And I know you're inundated by your fleet peers all around the country, maybe around the world. Would you think what's working in New York could also work in a city like Houston, where you're almost all electric, where Houston roughly twice the size of New York? Can you see an all electric fleet working there as well?
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, in the early days of electrification, when the range was more limited, so, you know, the early Nissan Leafs were 80 mile range on a battery. And of course that gets reduced by air conditioning use, heater use, radio use, lights and sirens. That gets reduced by draw on the battery. Then obviously, yeah, there are limitations. And the more miles you have to drive, even if they're kind of, you know, highway miles, I mean, that gets tougher. We've seen the range go dramatically up. You know, 250 miles is now standard for all our electric models. We just put in our first, the Chevy Silverado, at 400 mile range. And I think we're going to see more of that, right? Extended range is becoming an option in all kinds of options on the pickup sides, on the cargo van side. So with that kind of range capacity, you know, are there municipal operations that are going more than 250 miles a day? I mean, that's a lot of driving, right? If you just think about, you know, what that would mean you'd have to be doing 4 to 5 hours of continuous driving as part of your job. There could be roles like that, but I don't think too many. So I do think that with the range improvements on electric, this is going to be more and more available for others to do, even those who have to do big miles. And let me say something about mileage. Yes, in New York City, we're not doing the big miles every day. It's hard to do. How many miles can you do? If you know New York City, you know, I'm looking at the Brooklyn Bridge right now and it's pretty slow traffic, right? You can only go so many miles inside the city because of the traffic reality of our city. But idling is also drawing on the battery. So, and there is an equivalent, and all the manufacturers put out a formal equivalent of idling time to, you know, miles per gallon equivalent, or to battery miles equivalent. So, you know, we may not do the same miles, but we have the idling issue. So we are drawing on the cars, we're using the vehicles pretty substantially. And I think as you see this range going up, and certainly when you're getting into the 400 type mile range, and that's where we're going, I think electrification is going to be available for all, certainly municipal operations.
Yeah, excellent. And then lastly, your partnership with your electric provider, which I take it is Con Ed, right? That's your electric provider?
Absolutely.
So as you're thinking about charging infrastructure, do you feel like they'll be able to keep up with you to provide adequate power across the city that you need for recharging those batteries at night?
So far, so good, but it's absolutely a challenge. So we're working with Con Ed every day. And, you know, our electric charging unit is managed by Assistant Commissioner Brent Taylor, who's a longtime fleet professional and really extraordinary public servant. Probably never imagined that so much of his daily life would be dominated by electric charging, right? He's a person who really grown up in the fleet industry and Enterprise Rental and worked at GM Maven, and now is back with us and doing a lot of charging. But he and his team are out every day assessing sites, assessing electrical capacity, putting in charging with Con Ed. It's been a really great partnership. We're hoping to say a little bit more about that publicly as soon as next week. That said, you know, there is a challenge. There are definitely sites where there is electric limitation. Right. So, you know, we've wanted to put up charging at certain locations. And then Con Ed says, well, you know, we can do it, but it'll be incredibly expensive and time consuming to bring electrification to that particular location. So far, we've managed to kind of move to other locations and find other opportunities. But, you know, as more and more vehicles become electrified, certainly, you know, the challenges on Con Ed will increase. As buildings become electrified, Right. There's also a separate desire through Local Law 97 and through other efforts to do as much as possible to electrify buildings, to take our building systems off fuel oil, off natural gas when we can, and go to zero emissions. All very well-intentioned, important projects, but a lot more draw. And, you know, we interestingly just had a meeting just a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about one specific sanitation garage and trying to balance the fleet electrification projects with the building electrification projects and trying to figure out all that load. And that's the kind of conversation that's going to be happening more and more as both of these endeavors to go to zero emissions, both on the building systems and the fleet system side, move on. But I will say that we've made enormous progress. We're managing 2,000 charging ports right now. Certainly the biggest charging network in New York State. One of the biggest, I'm sure, in the country. Again, if someone's got a bigger single operated network than 2,000 ports, let me know. So we've made enormous progress. But no question, the electric grid challenges are major things going forward.
So that helps me understand something else, because I saw you interviewed and you were talking about how the biofuel industry and the electrification teams really need to work together. And I was struggling to understand, but I think you just probably walked me into that, even as you see so much opportunity for electrification. And you talked a little bit about snow plows and some of the heavy, heavy duty equipment, but that's the genesis of why you think the electrification world needs to be still partnered with the biofuels industry. Just the opportunities for both.
Absolutely. So again, I described my NYC Clean Fleet Plan, and it's three strategies: electrify, efficiencies, biofuels. And by the way, efficiencies apply to everything, right? A smaller and more better efficiently designed biofuel operating truck is better than a large, less efficiently, right? Electric vehicles can be more efficiently designed, more efficiently and better purposed in how you buy them. So efficiencies should always be something we're looking at, but there's an enormous set of additional opportunities for electrification. Electrification is still a very small percent of vehicles out there. Now, it could be a huge percent. I happen to be looking outside over the Brooklyn Bridge right now. Most of the vehicles I'm looking at, sedans, SUVs, minivans, small pickups, cargo vans, that's most of the vehicles out there in the road today, not just in New York, but in America. They all have electric models. All of them could be electrified with known, reliable, available models that in the light and medium side will save you money. So electrification has a huge growth opportunity. That said, we have an enormous amount of existing trucking and off-road equipment out there in this country as well. Our fleet alone operates 5,000 off-road equipment pieces, front-end loaders, backhoes. We operate over 350 agricultural tractors, the New Holland and John Deere tractors. Who knew? Snow melters. That equipment is going to be using some form of liquid fuel for a while. That's just the reality. For a lot of the off-road equipment that we operate, there's not even an electric concept out there, much less a viable commercial electric unit. So the biofuel industry has an enormous growth opportunity in front of it, right? Maybe more growth opportunity than they have feedstock to fill it. Although at a recent event, they challenged that and said, you show us the demand and we'll find the product. And I said, great. So I think there is an enormous opportunity for growth in the electrification side, growth in the biofuel side. Both of them are lower carbon options, better options than fossil fuels. We've seen some fossil fuel companies starting to invest in both of them. So it doesn't even have to be about, this company or that company. It's about all of us achieving cleaner fuels at the tailpipe, better fuels in carbon reduction at the greenhouse gas level, moving toward decarbonization on all sides. If someday our entire industry, transport industry, is being powered between biofuels and electrification, I'll take my pension. I'll throw a nice party. I'll take my government pension, and then they can battle out to the end. And that would be brilliant, right? I hope we can get to that. But the reality is we're not anywhere near that today. The majority of fuel is fossil fuel right now. And that's where We need electrification. We need biofuels, keeping to move forward in getting us lower greenhouse gas emissions, lower carbon fuels, and working together to do that, right? They don't, you know, the future is in front of both of them. You should be working together to have a common support and a common agenda of low carbon fuels than battling with each other for whatever small piece of the pies you have right now while we still burn dirty fuels. So I've been saying that to both industries, and they let me talk to them a lot. Yeah, I'm going to keep saying
it. Keith, great answer. You're talking strictly to the wide path that we love to talk about, a wide path to a cleaner climate, where it would be electrification, several kinds, right? Straight up battery electric, plus probably hybrids, and then a range of biofuels. It's an excellent.
And again, and hydrogen too. Well, New York City offers a lot of logistical and infrastructure challenges for hydrogen. I don't think we are leading the way on the East Coast for renewable diesel and electric. It's harder on the hydrogen side because of these infrastructure issues. But I fully recognize that clean hydrogen sourced through renewables can be a real answer in the transportation industry. I think we'll be a little bit further behind on that because our infrastructure challenges make hydrogen more difficult. But hydrogen should be part of the story. It's not as immediately part of our story, but I travel a lot in this industry, and there's a lot of real buzz and investment in hydrogen. So I don't want to cut that out.
We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back with Keith Kerman.
Zero is a big number. Getting close to a zero emissions future starts with using the broadest mix of clean, low-carbon energy sources. You might be surprised to know that propane produces a lot of energy for thousands of purposes and millions of people with virtually zero particulate matter, zero impact to the ozone, zero toxicity, and zero potential for storage-related contamination. It's low NOx and low CO2 to boot. Path to Zero is sponsored by Propane. Energy for everyone. Learn more at propane.com. Maybe I'll win.
Welcome back to our special Earth Day 2024 podcast. And our guest is Keith Kerman, who heads up New York City's fleet, one of the largest fleets in the country, and also one of the greenest fleets in the country. Let's talk about two other things, and then we'll kind of let you go back to the Earth Day activities that I know you have planned. Cost. I would think your fleet, you probably think about a little higher initial cost when you choose electric, probably a little lower operating cost. Are these costs working out in a way that you kind of envisioned they would years ago?
Yeah, certainly on the light duty side and even the medium duty side. So first we'll take the light duty. And I will note that if you go on our website, DCAS, Department of Citywide Administrative Services, NYC Fleet, we put out a lot of publications, NYC Fleet newsletter. We put out a lot publicly, including a total cost of ownership document, which we've had out for many years and we just recently updated it. So for light duty and medium duty, we see a real return on investment over the lifetime. Yes, you pay a little extra. It can be, 15 to 20% extra to buy the vehicles, but you are getting enormous maintenance savings. We operated 400 electric vehicles over a lifetime, right? So not too many organizations can say they've actually already operated 10 plus years on their electric fleet. But we did, and we've had Bolts and Leafs, especially the Leafs, that have already operated well over their lifespan. And we looked at the maintenance. We published that. Axios did some public reporting on that. And it's 60%+ maintenance savings. It's tremendous. And it should be, right? You don't have the fuel lines. You don't have the catalytic. I joke, you don't have the catalytic converter to steal. Even on some of the very efficient hybrid vehicles, they're great until everybody steals the catalytic converters. And then we're spending $2,500, $3,000 to replace them. You don't have the engine and transmission issues. You don't have some of the other maintenance issues. And so we're seeing that benefit. So you're getting the savings on the maintenance side. And then of course you're getting the savings on the fuel side. electricity is just simply more less expensive than fuel. It's also more stable pricing than fuel. And an electric vehicle is a far more efficient way to propel anything, any vehicle, than the combustion engine. The combustion engine is an extraordinary innovation. It created the modern world that all of us participate in over the last 150 years or so. But it's an incredibly inefficient way to propel something, right? You lose 70 to 80% of the energy in the combustion process to exhaust and heat, right? I mean, if I, you know, told you, hey, let's go out and buy pizza and I'll buy 10 slices and we'll throw eight away and eat two of them, you'd say, well, why are you wasting the eight? Well, that's what you do every time you drive your gas car. You waste 80% of the energy from gasoline. Energy does not do that. And so it's much more efficient. So you're getting the savings on the energy side. You're getting the savings from the fuel side. We also add about 2 years of replacement life. So if in general, we're trying to replace vehicles at 9 to 10 years, for electrics, we're going up to 11 to 12 years. The argument being, you're not going to have those maintenance issues. You're not going to have to worry about the big engine transmission job. And the batteries last. Do you know, having operated both hybrids in scale, right? 4,500 hybrids we operate over now 20 years. And 5,000 EVs, you know, we've never done a battery replacement for maintenance. Never, not one battery replacement. We've done them only when we crash things. I'm not going to tell you we haven't busted up some cars and had batteries rupture. We've never done a maintenance replacement on a battery. So those batteries will last. On the light and medium duty side, I think there's a real return on investment. I will tell you, I don't think it's there on the heavy side, right? And so you know, there are lots of people who disagree with me who will tell you, the TCOs are really, you know, great over the years. I don't see it, not yet. We're investing in trucks. We're trying to do our first set of trucks. I mentioned that correction bus. We have our first electric garbage trucks, rack trucks, attenuator safety trucks out there, some other fun initiatives that we're going to be announcing soon on the trucking side. But they're still really very expensive. And so if you're adding $200,000 to on a $150,000 diesel unit, it's very, very hard to make that much money up over lifetime maintenance. So I would say, yeah, in the light, medium duty side, you're seeing that real, it's an economically really strong decision that, you know, I think you'll save money in the light duty side. I think you'll break even on the medium side. Heavy, we still need to see the market develop. You know, we're hoping to be part of that. And you know, it's still early in the heavy duty side. And one thing I'll just say about that, I mean, I like to be honest, I'm not going to say heavy duty has an ROI yet, because I don't see it. On the other hand, just 3 years ago, I would have told you I had zero electric medium duty vehicles, zero pickups and vans. And pickups and vans are 25% of the city fleet and a huge percentage of vehicles out there in our nation. Today, I have over 600 all electric pickups and vans, and I'm doing another order of about 150 as we speak. So things can change quickly. I think we've seen that growth in the medium duty side and the light duty side. And I'll be the first to say, I think we still need to see a lot of progress on range, on cost, and on functional capacity on the heavy and specialized.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I don't think most people understand the difference in architecture between a light-duty vehicle and then a medium-duty vehicle and a heavy-duty vehicle. The electric architecture is significantly different. So you've just spoken volumes to it. Let's address one other issue. I know we'll talk about safety. I know I recognize you all as a strong leader in that and been pretty public about e-bikes in the city really creating problems, both, you know, where e-bikes are stored, but more concern, I think, is in people's apartments. But you have been on record a couple times as saying really the city has mitigated most risks of electric vehicles. You want to talk about any of the safety issues there?
Sure. So, you know, fire risk is an absolutely important issue. And in New York City, we've seen with e-bikes, which are critical, there are a lot of people, delivery staff, and so many others who are using e-bikes as part of their daily lives, their daily work. And, you know, we're supportive of that as a transportation mode. However, non-UL certified, non-quality manufactured e-bikes are a real safety concern and have been causing fires and tragedies throughout the city. and have been a big, big problem. Mayor Adams announced a whole program to address e-bikes being led by Laura Cavanaugh, the fire commissioner. The city council has been very engaged in this issue. New York City has been advocating at a federal-ish level for changes to policy to kind of regulate the sale of these bicycles and batteries to make sure they are manufactured properly, that they are UL certified, and that they are safe. And so that concern on the e-bike side is very important. Now, we have not seen those issues on the vehicle side. Vehicles have UL certified batteries. Vehicle manufacturer obviously is subject to federal oversight as well as state oversight. And, you know, to this day, knock on wood, because I don't want to jinx myself, we've not had an electric vehicle burn up because of the vehicle itself. We've had three electric vehicles that have been part of fires. The fires all being caused by structures either above or beyond them, right? So in two cases, a manhole cover blew up and an electric vehicle happened to be above it and destroyed the vehicle. But it had nothing, you know, if I was above it, I'd have been blown up too. I mean, it had nothing to do with the car. Wrong place, wrong time. That said, you know, so, and I will say, and we published a little bit on this, and you can go on our website. We've had in the same period of the last 8 or 9 years ago, so while we've been doing electrified, 200 plus diesel and gas vehicle fires. So it is very possible for us to have a fire in the fleet. And right now it's almost exclusively with the gas and diesel models. That said, there is no question that we will have an electric vehicle fire at some point, right? Batteries have risks. Vehicles can be can overheat, can have different types of problems that can come up. We do want to make sure that the public is educated about those fires. Electric batteries will burn very hot and very strong. They will burn much stronger, and it'll be a much more involved fire than an equivalent gas or diesel fire. They also can do something that is non-intuitive for all of us. They can reignite. They're chemical fires. And so when a chemical fire is exhausted or stops, it is very possible for it to 2 hours later to start on fire again. You're not going to likely see that in a gas or diesel traditional fire, combustion liquid fuel fire. So, and we've put out some educational material in partnership with the New York City Fire Department above that. Certainly your viewers need to know if an electric vehicle's on fire, stay away from it. Make sure that emergency responders, whether it's EMS or fire or police, know that it's an electric vehicle. So know that there are different types of risks that, you know, and they need to be trained to turn off these batteries and understand the risks. But what I'll tell you is that electric vehicles right now are a safer unit in general than their gas and diesel partners. That said, battery risk is an important thing. We need to make sure people understand it, and we need to get on top of electric bike fires. One concern that I have bringing a large electric fleet to New York City is that the public imagination of electric can be dominated by these horrible fires with the bikes. So we don't want the public to kind of say, you know, pox on all your houses. You know, we hear that electric batteries are causing fires, so we don't want any of them. We need to make sure that the electric bikes are safe and properly manufactured, and that we're having no battery fires, so that not to confuse. And you know, first off, these are just horrible events, and we need to stop them. We also don't want to see the electric vehicle program that really isn't having those issues be cast and poorly thought of in the broader context of these other fires. So really big issue, a lot of work being done in New York City to get on top of these electric bike issues, but they're national in scope as well. We need standards nationally so that electric bikes are being properly manufactured, properly inspected, properly sold throughout the country.
You really have been a leader in that area, and I always want to compliment you and thank you for it, because I follow that issue and acknowledge that you really been at the tip of all that conversation. All right, today's Earth Day, and let's just think 1 year. You've already teased us a couple times about announcements coming. Anything you want to talk to us about between Earth Day today and Earth Day 2025?
Well, certainly, I mentioned in our NYC Clean Fleet Plan, we said that we would achieve 50% greenhouse gas reduction by 2025 in the New York City fleet. That commitment was originally made in 2015 as part of the Paris climate discussions going on around the world. And we published that commitment. So in 2025, if not sooner, we are going to have made 50 by 25. So we are committed to being, and we are on the pace, maybe it gets announced before 2025. But, you know, we didn't just make an announcement as part of those climate accords. We committed to achieving it. And so through electrification, through hybrids and efficiencies, and through our replacement of all fossil fuels, we are set up to achieve 50 by 25. So certainly in 2025, I want our fleet to be known as an organization under the leadership of Mayor Adams, under the leadership of New York City government, that said it was going to do this big thing on climate in the transportation area and then went out and did it.
Awesome. All right, let's have a little fun. We have fun two ways. One, we use a little magic. We're going to give you a magic wand. You can use that magic wand to change one thing in the next 1 year regarding climate change sustainability. Keith, how would you use it?
All right. So not to get it all political, but nothing matters more than our national direction and national policy. So I would say if I have your magic wand, we will keep where we are now in terms of national policy, pushing towards climate improvement, pushing toward electric vehicles, pushing toward fuel efficiency, pushing towards sustainability. We do not need a return to fossil fuel investment. We do not need a return to polluting fuels. We need to keep on this pace, as so many parts of the world are doing. We need to keep pushing. So I would say I would like to see, without saying what I'm saying in subcontext, I want to see national policy continue on this pace toward sustainability, toward more fuel efficient, more cost efficient, cleaner vehicles. These are great vehicles. We're seeing a move in the electric vehicle market on its own, right? Some of the top luxury vehicles in the world are electric vehicles. And that's because they're great vehicles. And so I think the electric vehicle and the zero emission vehicles are going to prove themselves. They're going to keep going. And we need to make sure that policy continues to support that. So if I had a wand, that's what I'd do with it. And I'm sure you can all read the subtext of it.
Good use of the wand. Thanks. All right. One other thing we love to do is to respect the time and the expertise you've shared with us by planting a tree in a national forest in recognition of the time you spent with us. Do you have a national forest in mind where we should plant that tree?
Well, this is a tough one for me because, you know, I'm a New York City parks guy. And so I really want, but those aren't national forests. Those are city forests. So if you can figure out a way to plant a tree in Central Park or in Pelham Bay Park, then that's the best place to plant a tree. But I can't tell you the national parks. So I actually had to look this up. The only national forest in New York is the Finger Lakes. And so, which is between Seneca and Cayuga Lakes. And that actually is the only national forest in my state of New York. So if you can't get to it, I really want you to find a way, plant a tree in Central Park, Pelham Bay Park, and any of our extraordinary municipal parks run by just a terrific New York City Parks Department where I spent 17 years of my life and still am with them every day. But if you can't, it would have to be in Finger Lakes, our only New York National Park.
Well, we're gonna work on your city park idea, but with a little caveat that if the wrong person comes talks to us while we're planting that tree, we're gonna use your name a little bit. So we'll work on that.
it'll get you. You know, I think I still have some kind of get out of plant a tree power. I don't know, but I hope nobody bothers that.
Keith, what a great conversation. Nothing less than I expected. My favorite Harvard trained fleet manager, but I just cannot thank you for the clarity of your voice, the way you've really talked and been, you know, a friend of this program for a year or more. So thank you. Happy Earth Day to you. And thank you so much for the time. And thank you for the work you're doing, not only for New York City, but for really the fleet managers across the country. Thank you.
And thank you, Tucker. I mean, nothing is more important than getting the story of sustainability out there. I still think a lot of us who work in the industry understand what's happening, but that most people don't. So really thank you for your role in spreading the good word of what's possible on the sustainability side and pushing to promote these alternatives and giving me a little time today. So on behalf of Mayor Adams and our commissioner, Don Pinnock, it's great to be with you.
Before we wrap, I'm excited to let our listeners know that I'll be releasing my first book, also called Path to Zero, during Climate Week in New York City this coming September. In the book, I jump to the year 2050 and look back on how we achieved the net zero carbon future with the help of folks just like Keith who are making a real difference today. To learn more, you can find my landing page at PathToZeroBook.com. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to PathToZero@propane.com.